The World Solar Challenge exists since quite some 30 years. It's a property of South Australia, so it's the reason why we are very active in that area. Over the years, I think only once the UniSA won the World Solar Challenge or one part of the competition of the World Solar Challenge. And since then, about 20 years, University of Tokyo and the colleagues in Netherlands are very successful with this challenge. It's a very harsh challenge for the cars, traveling from Darwin to Adelaide for 3,000 kilometers in October, which is usually quite good time for sunshine, which is necessary. But the road is difficult, and yeah, it happens again and again that cars are just don't make it, they break apart. Last year, for example, we had a little bit of a weather event, and then the sunshine was not good enough, and some cars were just not able to reach Adelaide. This can always happen. So my opinion is always, if you have a good car, anything can happen between you not getting out of Darwin until you win the race here in Adelaide.
So there's a lot of international interest in this, from what I understand. What sort of countries bring vehicles over to compete in this?
They are usually in the order of 50-ish teams from all over the world. Europe, USA, Asia, Arabic nations, South America, yeah, Australia. The World Solar Challenge in Australia is one of several solar challenges. There's a US solar challenge. In other continents are other solar challenges. As far as I'm aware of, the World Solar Challenge is sponsored by Bridgestone, so it's actually the right name is a Bridgestone World Solar Challenge here in Australia. It's one of the harshest ones for the cars because of the conditions and the weather and temperatures and so on. So teams are flocking in from all over the world to participate in this World Solar Challenge. Most of the teams are university teams. Meanwhile, there are a few commercial participants, companies who develop a solar car, but very, very few. In the past, where only universities were involved in this. And of course, for students involved, when you are a student in Germany, for example, and you have a chance to go to Australia for several weeks to participate in something like this, it's a huge attraction. And therefore, a number of universities in Europe and all over the world don't have any problems to get the students engaged. They send them here to Australia to participate in the race. It's not necessarily a race. It's more, what do you call it, a rally. You're not racing. You have a particular time. You're driving your car between 9 o'clock and 5 p.m., so 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and then you have to stop. And where you are, you stop. Doesn't matter whether you are in a township or when you are just in the middle of nowhere. You have to stop, and then the time is taking how many kilometers you made over these 8 hours. And then the next morning, 9 o'clock, it starts again, and you're driving your car again up to 5 o'clock. So you have to travel on average 75 kilometers per hour in order to reach Adelaide in the proper time.
So what is the proper time? How much time are you given to get to Adelaide?
There's always a window where the people should arrive. And this window is somewhere from Friday to Saturday. And the team which uses the least time to come here to Adelaide is a winner for this type of competition. In addition to this, the jury is also assessing the cars in regards to practicality, especially in what we are participating in, the cruiser class, which are the more commuter-type cars, the real cars, not funny race cars. The real car, and then the practicality points are also added to this. So somebody who maybe is the fastest one comes to Adelaide as a first team, not necessarily wins when the car has very limited practicality.
There's been a lot of technology and development that's gone into this year's World Solar Challenge with the UniSA, and it's to do about efficiently using the solar. So could you tell us about this?
Our team is called the Australian Technology Network Solar Car Project Team, and we have 5 universities. There's UniSA, then there's RMIT in Melbourne, University of Technology in Sydney, Queensland University of Technology in Brisbane, and Curtin University in Perth. Came together in 2016. The Vice-Chancellor agreed to set up the project and to fund it and to build a car. And I was already involved to some extent because our Vice Chancellor David Lloyd was at the time leading, was chair of the Australian Technology Network. So I traveling around Australia, more so to say, and talking to the various university teams and faculties, what they think and where they see strengths in their local area, which we can use then for building a car. And then through this discussion, it was very clear that we have 5 universities where we have really complementary skills, and we pick, so to speak, the best people with the skills to participate in the team. So we have found then Queensland University of Technology, for example, they are doing all the high voltage, what we call high voltage parts, which is the battery and the battery management system and the electric motors and the motor controllers and all things around this. The University of Technology in Sydney is doing all the mechanical aspects, which is the suspension and brakes and pedal walks. Curtin University is doing all what we call the low voltage parts, which are in the car, usually all the lights and car management system, car control system, rear vision system, dashboard and displays. RMIT has a lot of expertise in aerodynamics in the engineering sector. They have more expertise also, but they are very strong in that area. So they were looking after the body, the main body of the car, and assembling and building the car. And here at UniSA, we are responsible for the solar panel arrays, the race strategy, interior work for the car, seats and steering, and the overall management of the entire project.
That sounds amazing. That sounds like an incredible collaboration.
It's absolutely amazing collaboration, and we are really blessed with very talented people from the various universities. It's not only the academics involved. So we have, I would say, in the order of maybe a dozen academics, and in the moment, 3 PhD candidates working in the team. We have then in the order of 20, 25 honors and master's student projects running. It's a big team, and we need to ensure that we have very good internal communications and the students are talking to each other on a regular basis, the academics are talking to each other on a regular basis, which is usually done by video conferencing. There's no other way we can do it.
It's fantastic to see such collaboration happening, particularly on something that is so, you know, new technology and stuff that is still, there's so much, a lot of research and development into it. So just incidentally, what do you get as a prize if you win?
We probably get a nice letter. That's one thing. I think that winning the race is a great thing, of course, and the university would like to see it. But what we also want to see that we attract interest from industry in the capabilities of the teams and the various particular capabilities of the teams. This is one important part of it. At the end, I don't know whether we get something like certificate or something like this. Of course, we are listed then in the World Solar Challenge homepage that we are, or who is the winner in 2019 and so on. It's really about recognition of the expertise of the universities or university involved.
Because I understand a significant part of what UniSA has contributed is this construction or building of an energy management system, which is what you're going to be working with in the 2019 challenge.
Yes, it is one part of the team UniSA, and it's mainly driven by PhD student Erica Bellchamber and the supervisor Peter Patton. It's the management system for the sun battery system we have, so that the car, while we are driving, we are measuring exactly how much energy is consumed, how much energy is produced, and from these data we can model how quick the car should drive and can drive, or should drive, to get as far as possible within the time frame of 8 hours. And this also depends on, of course, cloud cover, for example, or whether we have shading in some areas or not. So the road and the track is very well known and included in this modeling, so that we can predict quite a bit what we can expect during the next 8 hours.
Yeah, because I understand that that's something that you've already attracted interest from industry about.
Yes, there's industry interested in this, and they are talking to the people with the expertise in that area. And when you consider that people are now really thinking about having solar-driven planes or helicopters and drones, those things are very, very important in order to ensure that your device or your platform is able to stay in the air, for example, as long as possible, and that you can predict how long it will stay in the air, not just, let's say, have a good guess. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds actually very, very important.
Oh, yes. When you consider the price of the drone, it's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, look, thank you very, very much for explaining that to us. All the best for your particular challenge. I hope everything goes really well.
Okay, thank you.